I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And we coming from a basement to your headphones. Barely even know who we are, but changing the unknown.
Hello, friends, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Podcastianos. I am your substitute interim host, Eric Wayne, and I'm joined today by a very special guest, a man who has mastered the Yurchenko double pike, and that man is Chris Iyett. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm excellent. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Maybe I'll explain it and break it down for you in just a little bit. But let me
I expect a lot of this in the next hour of not understanding what we're talking about. Yeah. So fire away.
Just do whatever the vocal substitution for nodding along is. Just make listening noises. That's all we really need for you. Let me introduce you properly. This is Chris Iyett. Am I saying your last name properly? It's not Lot. I've gotten that far.
It's Iyett. It's Iyott. It's not Lot. So you're in the range. You're fine.
Yep. I bet you're longing for like a serif font so you can, you know, people can see so that. You know,
I'm in the marketing business and I think people think that I send emails and forget to capitalize my last name. I think it's lost me business, to be honest with you. So yeah, just
this man does not know how to spell his own name.
I know it's like, this guy's so sloppy. He can't capitalize his own last name, or they think I'm E. Cummings or something. I don't know. So anyway.
Chris is the proprietor, the guru at Social Sound. He is a vodka entrepreneur and, of course, former MLive Tigers beat reporter. And thank you for joining, Chris. I appreciate it.
I'm happy to be here. It's good that you could find somebody. People aren't interested in what I do. They're interested in what I used to do and the other thing I do. So, you know. Here I am.
You know, it's a chance to relive all your former Tigers glory with us. So my leadoff question is circling back around to this. You don't know what a Yurchenko double pike is? No. So recently, Simone Biles, who is the now seven-time women's gymnastic champion, has pulled off this feat. And it's a quantum leap from the previous vault that she was able to do. Do you find gymnastics impressive?
It's definitely impressive. It's not something that it's not appointment television for me necessarily, but the skill level is very impressive. And now that you say that, I am vaguely aware of this because it seems like I heard something that the judges graded her down. Yes. And the theory is that they graded her down to discourage other people from trying it because it's so dangerous.
That's exactly right. It's like, so hard and dangerous that they're not going to give her the props because they don't want anybody to bust their head open.
Sure.
Because that's hard to do a half a flip because you tend to land on your head.
Yes. Yeah.
So she's got to go from 1 to 1.5 to 2.5 flips. So the leadoff question I really have for you is, could you do a somersault?
Could I do a somersault?
Yeah.
Could you do a somersault? I could do a somersault. I could not do a cartwheel.
See,
I think my range of motion is somewhere between somersault and cartwheel. You don't think I could do a somersault?
I think you could. I think you could do one. Maybe especially if you had like one of those carpeted downward slopes, like they start, you know, the kiddie gymnasts on. I think you
could. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. That's necessity right there.
So did you see Simone Biles on her shoulder had this sequined goat for like the greatest of all time? You know, sequined on there. What do you make of that? Is that too much hubris or do you like the energy there?
I think goat is an overused term because it seems like there are like 12 goats currently in the NBA.
Yes.
And 12 goats currently in Major League Baseball. And also, you know, I begged you for 3 days to prep me on what we were talking about. And now you're just flinging gymnastics moves out all out the window. I have no idea what we're talking about. Well, is she the goat? She very well may be. Is goat an overused term? Absolutely. Should people ask themselves questions and answer them? No.
So
what I'm doing right now.
So, you know, goat always strikes me as weird because it wasn't that long ago where if you were the goat of the game, like you botched it, like you screwed it up. So
yes.
It's a term that's completely reversed itself.
I think it's a lowercase goat versus uppercase period between each letter goat, unless I'm wrong.
You are still a writer. You can't shut up.
I actually am. Yes, I am. I still write stuff. Yeah, it's how I pay the bills.
So. You know, I saw a tweet where I think it was Tatis Jr. or something, slides into second base and like holds on to the base and is like, this is the most athletic thing I've ever seen. And then I saw this flip by Biles and I'm like, yeah, they're different things, but that's kind of impressive too. It just shows that, you know, sports are all kind of different.
Sports are all kind of different and they're all kind of cool in their unique way, aren't they?
They are indeed. So we are presented by Moots Pizzeria. I'm not as smooth as Jordan with this, so you're just going to have to live with me, friends. Moots Pizzeria, downtown Detroit. We thank them for being our presenting sponsor. Go down to Library Street. You can hang out at Moots. They have the counter where you can get some food quickly, or you can sit down. It's a nice atmosphere. They will oven you up. It's like a special hot pizza oven, and they make a delicious pizza. Thank you to Moots for sponsoring us, Moots Pizzeria. That's what you should do. Let's talk a little bit about the Tigers. And this is maybe something new to you. Are you familiar with the Detroit Tigers any longer?
I am familiar with the Detroit Tigers. I am not as familiar with the Detroit Tigers as I was 5 to 10 years ago, obviously.
Right.
And honestly, I don't consume a ton of sports these days, but I do follow the events of the Tigers basically because I'm still on Twitter and I still follow all the beat writers.
Yeah, you have your same pool of people.
Yeah. Yeah. And not only in Detroit, but some guys from different teams around the country. And some of them, I followed them when they covered one team and they've since moved to another, but that's really kind of how I track baseball at this point is reading about it on Twitter. And of course, listening to the podcast, Giannis.
Obviously. That's a tender moment. Thank you.
That's great.
So who is left from the guys that you covered? Anybody? I mean, Cabrera.
Players on the team. Cabrera is left. I covered Norris. No.
Daniel Norris.
Okay. Yep. Matthew Boyd.
Sure. Fulmer.
Fulmer. Yes.
Fulmer.
We're gonna be running out pretty quick. I don't even know I don't even know. I was gonna ask if Jimenez was even in the major leagues, but I don't remember if I covered him in the majors or if I covered him as a prospect. My memory is today.
He
is today.
Yes. The day's not over yet, so we'll see about Big Joe.
Do you remember the best money making idea I ever had is when I said I wanted to do like a betting line of over under for Tigers prospects.
Basically, you wanted to short sell every
baseball prospect to their hometown team. And if I recall, I remember I said I could probably get thousands of dollars of bets over 100 career saves for Jimenez, and
be able to do that. But the thing is, for every you're right, you play the percentages, prospects largely flame out. But I did see tweeted the news from the White Sox when they traded Fernando Tatis Jr. And obviously Tatis is blowing it up. So if it's so hard because the percentages are absolutely in your favor, but I feel like when you get burned with it, it kind of stinks. How many years has it been? And Detroit Tigers fans are still bringing up John freaking Smoltz.
Well, yeah, but for every one of those that you get burnt on, there are 20 guys that fans think are going to be all-stars. I mean, they don't. Every time they traded a veteran for prospects, everybody imagines that those prospects are all going to grow into contributing major leaguers, everyday players. In hindsight, you got to look back. Jacoby Jones.
Yeah.
He's not having a heck of a career. But in hindsight, you look, they traded like 2 months of Joaquin Soria for Jacoby Jones, right?
Right.
That's not that much. Like, you can't expect to give up 2 months of Joaquin Soria and get a 12-year starting center fielder all-star. You get burnt occasionally. Most of the times you would not.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like the market on prospects has changed a little bit. And I think teams are actually more reluctant to part with their prospects, especially where that's kind of the value play. But I hear you saying still, like, maybe the Dave Dombrowski model of prospect trading is still the appropriate model to adopt.
I think you're right on all of those accounts, and I have no theory as to why. I think that people are holding on to prospects more often, and man, maybe they shouldn't. Maybe they can't get what they want for them anymore. Yeah. I'm sure analytics and advanced technology, all that stuff contributes.
And some of it's pure frugality, frugality.
Either way, I don't use words that long.
It's true.
Lynn Henning's not on the Thriftiness. Show. Eric.
Jordan said I should try to get Lynn, but here we are.
I love Lynn, but I try to imitate him, and I've done this to you before. I do not have the vocabulary to imitate Lynn Henning. And it's just jealousy on my part. I write at the third grade level, and I can't imitate anybody above that. So here we are.
Let's talk a little bit more current Tigers. So last night was the first night where Comerica Park was allowed to have essentially full capacity. And it looked like it was the same restriction. I think they had about 8,500 people or something like that. Now, granted, that was due to a rain delay. So what do you make of this? Do you think fans are going to come back? Do you think there's still some trepidation? Well, there's a little word for it. Trepidation around coming and being with crowds. Or do you think, we're going to get 30,000 people there again real soon?
I want you to look this up because we just implied that I don't pay much attention. I believe the attendance yesterday was announced at 9,161, and I may be wrong.
Wow.
But I believe it was 9,161. And I saw some people were like, this is proof that nobody's coming back. And other people were like, the rain had a big effect. I don't think the rain had any effect on that. If it was, it was extremely negligible. Ooh, negligible. Are we gonna do this every time we use a word over?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. I don't think the rain had a huge effect. People buy tickets. I think you're gonna see it creep up. I don't think you're gonna see a ton of 30,000 crowds at Comerica this year, but I think you'll see it grow. And part of it, I think people are a little bit hesitant to go out. It's a habit not to go out.
Right.
But also, they just changed that rule. I'm not even sure everybody is aware when the rules have changed so much in the last year. I'm not sure people are aware that the rule has changed a lot of people. So you'll see that grow, but the way the Tigers are playing, I don't think you're going to see it grow
too much. I think there's a little bit of inertia involved. I mean, a lot of people plan trips ahead of time. There's these season tickets or whatever. And that momentum has not yet come back because we, stopped dead. But because, even when the Tigers were atrocious, there was still, 15,000 people there, even on a kind of a crummy night. So I think it'll rebound some, but it's just going to take a little time. People have to establish new habits and stuff. So,
yeah, absolutely.
The next thing I want to talk about is we kind of touched on this is the prospect world. Jacoby has been sent down and just has been really bad. And now we have the ascendance of one Derek Hill, who I tend to poo-poo. But so there's a question in all of this. Do you think we'll see Jacoby Jones back? And what do you make of Derek Hill?
Will you see Jacoby Jones back?
He's not a youngster anymore.
He's 29? I got to believe he's has they announced that he's cleared. I mean, I got to believe he's going to clear with the salary he has this year.
Yeah.
He's going to go to Toledo, and then, you know, at some point they'll probably bring him back up this year at some point if they need him, put him back on the 40. And then at the end of the year, you've got a decision to make. And I would assume, all these phrases are coming back to me that I used to use all the time. I'm assuming he's a non-tender at the end of the year.
A non-tender candidate.
Non-tender candidate. So these are literally phrases I've not spoken or typed in 5 years. So I want to make sure I'm using them properly. I would assume he's a non-tender, but will you see him again this year? I don't know, probably. Is he a big part of the future? I can't imagine that he is. Right. Derek Hill. My gosh, what year did they draft Derek Hill?
Oh, it seems like forever ago. He's only, he's 25 now. So, and they drafted him as a 18 or 19 year old out of high school. So has to be 6 or 7 years ago.
Oh, no. Gosh, I'm going to take the over on 6 or 7 years.
I don't remember.
Is that possible? I'm looking this up and I'm not sure. Are we allowed to look things up while we talk?
Oh, sure. Fine. We just got to kill time. So,
okay. Yeah. It's been, I can't find it. And it's
in the first round of the 2014 draft.
2014. So, yeah.
You can do math on the air. So that's eight.
We're pushing seven years.
7 years ago. Yeah. So what did I say? Six. So I was close.
Yeah. You were actually closer than I thought. It just seems like it's been forever since they drafted him.
Right. Well, we've had a lot of Derek Hill. I mean, he was our first round pick when pickings were kind of slim. And so I think his name has just been in our consciousness for so long now that, you know, it seems like forever.
It's crazy that you talk about prospects and I'm not sure I'm answering your question and I don't remember what it was, to be honest.
Doesn't matter.
It seems like at one point he was like the number one prospect in the system. And then it seems like I recently saw where the Tigers called somebody else up and he moved into like the Tigers' 30th best prospect. And I was like, wow, like, yeah. Maybe none of those things are true. Old. You should fact check everything I say. But yeah, I don't know. What was the question on Derek Hill again? He's
good.
He's a defensive wizard with some speed. He runs into walls hard.
He'll catch the ball for sure.
Apparently he's hitting this year, which I guess is one of those things that, you know, makes you make it to the majors. They always say, like, Jake Rogers, is he going to hit? Derek Hill, is he going to hit? Jacoby Jones, is he going to hit? There's a million guys. Quinton Berry, is he going to hit? Yeah. Like, a million
Sergio Alcantara can catch the ball for you, but I mean,
is he going to hit?
Yeah. But yes, he did have two hits last night, which doubled his major league output for hits.
Excellent.
So he's fun to watch. I mean, he's an exciting player. You know, everybody, yes, the strategy is 3-run home runs and that makes good sabermetric sense or whatever, but there's still some atmospheric, some aesthetics about baseball where it's fun to see guys run around, make athletic plays and go catch the ball.
Absolutely. You know, this reminds me of something that kills me sometimes. People talk about Major League Baseball players and they compare them to other Major League Baseball players, which is totally fine. Okay. Derek Hill has two major league hits. Like that's a good bait four now. Okay. He's got four now.
Yeah.
That's a good baseball career in the scheme of baseball.
Yeah.
Like, yes. I think there have been 20,000 players who have played major league baseball total ever. Yep.
Yes.
Like if you make it to the major leagues, people are like, oh, that guy's a scrub. Like you made it to the major leagues. That's something.
That's something
like,
that's going to be on your resume, on your calling card forever. I was a major league baseball player.
I said that to a guy, and I won't mention his name because I don't have permission. I said it to a guy who was up and down with the Tigers and he retired. And he told me he was done. And I was like, you've had a heck of a career. And he goes, you are one of the very few people that would say that. I was like, dude, you played in the major leagues, like six different seasons. Like there aren't a lot of guys that do that. So anyway,
you know, it's fascinating. And maybe we'll have an opportunity soon to talk to some guys like that. But I talked to a guy who made it as far as the Whitecaps. So low A, maybe he played a little bit in high A. And then he took a job selling, you know, medical supplies or whatever. And you know, it's fascinating because their whole life up to that point has been baseball, baseball, and nothing but baseball. Mm-hmm. And regardless of your level of success, at some point, guys have to transition into something else. And I do find it fascinating how they deal with that, you know, emotionally and intellectually.
It's torturous. Like,
it's got
to
be.
Whether you make it to low A or high A, or whether you play 14 years in the major leagues, at some point, usually somebody else informs you that you are done.
Right.
Yep. Like, you don't get to pick where you play for the most part. You can get traded any moment. And at some point, somebody says, you're not good enough to be around here anymore. And yep. you're a young man and your career is ostensibly over. Yep. And it's all you've done since you were 6 years old. No, that is, I think that's an underrated aspect of the whole major league lifestyle is how it ends. I mean, whether you're, I mean, I'm sure Ian Kinsler wasn't ready to quit playing baseball, and he's not. He's actually playing the Olympics this year for Israel. Yep. But goodness, like, those guys just want to play until they're 100.
Yep. You know? Yeah, Victor Martinez. I mean, they brought him a pair of boots, and it was kind of like, you know, Pujols, you know, he's still playing, but the Cardinals, not the Cardinals, the Angels relatively unceremoniously said, yeah, you're kind of done with us. And this is the one of the best baseball players ever. Never to do it.
Yeah.
So it's fascinating. On the other side of the things, we have to talk about Eric Haas, who my understanding is a Michigan product from Divine Child. You're an East Side. Well, now you're an East Side of the State guy. Do you know what a Divine Child is or where this is or anything?
I know Divine Child is in Dearborn. I used to work with a guy who graduated from Divine Child. So yeah, that's what I know, is that Divine Child is in Dearborn.
There you go. And it has produced for us Eric Haas. You know, we talked about older rookies with Derek Hill, but Eric Haas is 28 years old, and usually 28-year-old rookies do not emerge as, you know, guys. But in the last six games, he is hitting .450. He's got six home runs and a 1.922 OPS. And he's hit some other balls hard. So people around Tigers Twitter are fired up about Eric Haas. And I think Eric Haas is fired up that he's been able to do this with his Tigers, his hometown Tigers. What do you make of this? Is this simply a guy who caught a hot streak, or do the Tigers have something in Eric Haas?
As a totally uneducated observer, I will say that my experience tells me that it's a hot stretch, and it's fortunate. I hope for Tigers fans that, you know, he does this for 10 years. But I would expect him to cool off at some point in the relatively near future. But here's the thing about baseball. You never know. The Tigers system was never, I wouldn't say flush with prospects during the time I covered them. Okay. But they had middle infield guys Devin Travis, they had guys who were highly touted. Mm-hmm. And then and I know that no one was really thrilled with the trade even at the time, but who thought Eugenio Suarez was going to be who he is today? Who thought that? Like, raise your hand and find me evidence that you thought it.
I thought he might be good, but I thought Hernan Perez might be just as good. Perez.
There were a bunch of those guys, and I mean, it's hard to tell how they're going to stack up and sort out over time. It really is. My most memorable Suarez moment was when he did that. We had it on Instagram. He made the animal noises. Do you recall this?
He was like, the turkey says, the chicken says. That's right.
It was hilarious. I cried laughing every time I watched it.
That's fine. We got to bring that back.
We got to find that. You found it a couple years ago when I mentioned it. I couldn't. For sure. I've spent way too much time looking for it and not being able to find it. But the at the time,
it was all in Spanish. Like the Spanish variations of the animal noises. Yes.
Yeah, and I wasn't even sure. He wasn't the most heralded prospect at the time. I wasn't even, first time I saw it, I was like, is this Suarez? But you never know. You never know.
You might recognize three or four guys in the clubhouse today if you went in, probably.
Probably like the three or four guys we mentioned. There's got to be somebody else.
Yeah, for sure.
No, probably not.
So since I have to pick your brain a little bit, not only did you cover the Tigers for a lot of years, you covered Detroit Pistons basketball. And, you know, just in a general sense, like, what is something the average fan doesn't understand about pro sports or professional athletes? Like, fans are so hyped up about the laundry and the logo and their team. Like, what are we missing?
I remember, I mean, I obviously grew up a sports fan, And then I spent a lot of years in local sports journalism, which was, you know, covering high schools and local colleges, occasionally made it to a big event. And I remember covering the Pistons in 2 weeks in, and with all due respect to all sports fans who are listening to this podcast, the millions, with all due respect, and I'm sure this doesn't apply to you personally, but after 2 weeks, I remember thinking, fans don't have any idea what's going on.
Okay. Interesting.
There are so many inner workings, and you're closer to it when you're a journalist, because you're in the clubhouse every day and you talk to these guys and you hear things, but there are so many little inner workings that you don't see that people can't explain. Like a manager can't sometimes say why he made a move.
Right.
To move somebody up in the lineup or down in the lineup. And I'm trying to avoid specific examples because I know some of these things from being there, and sometimes I wasn't able to write about them. But you just, there's so many personality traits and issues, and I don't know if that's a good answer. It's amazing. The thing that I think it's overlooked for baseball players is these guys play like 162 games in 180 days.
Right.
You just don't like blink your eyes and end up in Texas. And they flew, they traveled way better than I did. They traveled way better than I did. They didn't wait in security. They had charter flights. They had their hotel keys waiting for them. But think about it. You play night, you play at night, you get up the next morning, pack early, play a day, fly, repeat for 6 months. And when people, sometimes they'll give a guy a day off and people are like, he's playing a game. Why does he get a day off? Right. Like, that's an absolute grind. That baseball is a grind like no other. For players, and I mean, from a media perspective, it's you know, I used to argue with a friend of mine who was a long-term NBA beat writer about which one's travel was hardest. But baseball, you're just flying every 3 days. Like, you're just going someplace new all the time. But yeah, the the grind that players go through over the course of a season, I don't think people pay a lot of attention to that. And geez, oh, Pete's, when they get a day off, this guy's deserve a day off every once in a while. That's a long season.
Well, I just think about, you know, I go on a 3-day trip someplace, or you fly someplace and then fly home. And just that sense of relief when you get home, you can lay your suitcase down and flop on your bed or whatever. Like, the relief you feel from that. But those guys don't have it. They're constantly on the move. You're untethered to parts of your life. And it does have to be a grind.
No, and I remember talking to a player one day, and I think he just overheard me having a conversation about FaceTiming with my kids. And it wasn't, I miss my kids. It was, don't you hate FaceTime? Because when I'm done talking to my kid and they hang up, I just want to smash my iPad with a bat, because he missed his family this much.
Sure.
And it wasn't, like I said, it wasn't just like, yeah, I miss my kids. It was like, It was very strongly worded. It's torturous to be gone the way we're gone.
You know, and a lot of that stuff is hidden from fans because, you know, you want this professionalism. And the only time you see a family member on the field is after they throw a no-hitter. You know, I saw Spencer Turnbull and his wife or girlfriend, you know, came out, and all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, there's some humanity there. They're real people.
Well, and to be fair, like, yeah, they are. And I don't think people realize that, but that's kind of not to be crass, but as a sports fan, you want a bottom of the ninth inning game winning home run. You don't want details about how a guy misses his kids. Like, you know what I mean? Like, but there should be some humanity. There's not enough humanity there though, because the way people get treated on the way players and athletes and rock stars and journalists, frankly, get treated on Twitter is horrific. And there should be some more humanity involved. People should think of that a little more often, but in reality, you know, people are out to watch sports, not human beings. Does that sound terrible?
No,
that sounded worse than a minute.
Right. I mean, it's still an entertainment industry, and fans are paying for the product, and want a certain set of things. And in some ways they're entitled to it, but in some ways it's important to realize it's a human endeavor too.
There's the line. There's just a line. You don't have to cross it in the end.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The next question I have to ask you is, I'm sure that there was some sensitive things and stories that you've encountered during your time with the Tigers, but I'm wondering if there's anything that you could share with us that's kind of interesting or funny as way of, by way of a story about the Tigers.
Oh boy.
This requires a lot of self-censoring, which I'm sure has to be difficult.
I don't know.
And I mean, you've written 1,000 things. I know.
I don't know if this is interesting, but I have several Phil Koch stories, which seems apropos. Fitting. But yeah. Oh, another big word.
Yes.
So this is actually kind of complimentary about Phil Koch. So this might be my perception of the athlete reporter relationship. I may be dead wrong about this, but my perception, generally speaking, is that most athletes like never let them see you sweat. Like they want to keep reporters at arm's length. And all of our stories every day were compiled into a packet and there were stacks of them in the clubhouse and players would read them. But a lot of times they wouldn't let you know that they read them.
So pause right there. So like the media relations people or whatever are compiling the media reports on the team and having them available for the team? Or
I don't know if they still do this, but yes.
Really?
If you walk into the clubhouse, there would be a stack of clips. On the front would all be all the headlines and it would be like so-and-so story, MLive, so-and-so story, MLive,
no
free press, news, MLB, MLB. And then they would have some national stuff on there too. But yeah, like a thick packet and there would be stacks of them. But for the most part, when players read your stuff, even if they got mad, they wouldn't say it to you because to me, that almost puts you in a position of power. Like I care what you think.
Yeah.
And I might be misperceiving this entirely, but when I cut my teeth on the Pistons beat, like Tayshaun Prince did not make eye contact with reporters. He would talk to us and his eyes would rove above our heads, which was,
that was easy.
He's taller. But I remember one day he said, I don't read all y'all's stuff, but I got somebody who does. So if you talk crap about me, I'll hear about it. So, and honestly, I think Tayshaun Prince probably read our stuff, but that is just kind of his way of saying it. So a lot of players like would get mad and they would just hold it in. They wouldn't say anything. So I actually appreciated this. I walk into the clubhouse one day and my rule, and I think this might be a general rule too. I don't know. Maybe I made this up, but I probably learned this from somebody. Is if you wrote something negative about somebody, I always felt it was my job to make myself available to that person the next day.
Sure.
So if I wrote something negative, I would hang out in the locker room, in the clubhouse, locker room for the Pistons, until I saw said person. I would usually like wander by and like nod my head and go, hey. And if they said, hey, I would move on. I felt like I needed to give them the opportunity to say, hey, you're an idiot. Hey, you're wrong, whatever.
Right.
I remember doing this several times with Richard Hamilton. I covered the Pistons during the Custer years. It was buffoonery was a Twitter hashtag before we knew what we were doing on Twitter, when we thought it was a toy, before we knew that people would actually see the stuff. So I just had that habit. But the point of this story and why I appreciated guys like Phil is I remember I walked into the clubhouse one day. We were on the road and Phil Koch sees me from across the room. I walk in and he starts wagging his finger at me. Come here. Come here. So I walk over. I'm like, what's up, Phil? And he goes, I left a mess on the bases. I'm like, what's that? He goes, I left a mess on the bases. I go, what are you talking about, Phil? You wrote that I left a mess on the bases. I'm like, did you read this? He goes, no, somebody told me. I go, all right, well, let's go find the clip. Let's go find the clip. So I went and got some clips. And I read it and it was something, I mean, this is all paraphrased. This is 7 years ago, right? I read it and I go, Phil, it says Tigers pitchers made a mess on the bases. You just happen to be one of those guys. And he's like, well, I don't know about that. And I go, listen, the first three guys in that inning didn't retire anybody. Like three pitchers entered the game and left the game and there were still no outs. And I pointed out to him and he goes, yeah, all right. And that was the end of it. But I appreciated that interaction because he respected me, I think, enough to have the conversation with
sure.
me.
Yeah.
And I got to correct something that if he hadn't, I think a lot of those guys heard what was written about them. The guys who didn't read what was written about them heard it, but they heard it second or third hand. And, and most of the time it was, and to be honest, when you're a beat writer, when you're on that kind of a schedule and you're sleep deprived and flying all over the place, and I'm not making excuses, but I remember there would be days where I would stand up at 1 a.m. in the press box and I would look at the guys and I would go, I just filed a terrible story and it's the best I could do today.
Yes.
Like you just had to move on and go to your next day. I mean, there were days, you know, I was filing 6, 8, 10 stories straight to MLive, you know, traveling, like some of the stuff we did is, and those guys still do, I respect what they do, is kind of insane, but some days you just did the best you could and you moved on to the next day and tried to do better. I mean, I think every career is like that to a degree, right? You just do the best you can and you can't do your best every single day. So sometimes that criticism was probably fair. I do remember one time we walked into a clubhouse and, I don't know why I feel like I can't tell stories with names attached to them because I think these are pretty innocent. Justin Verlander was standing in the clubhouse and he was reading clips. And one of the other reporters goes, how do we do today? or what grade did we get today?
Oh.
And Justin goes, I just do pass fail. And the reporter goes, how did we do today? And I think Justin said, most of the time you fail. And I think it was in good fun. I don't think he really meant that, but I don't know. There's nothing I could do about it if he meant it. But yeah, I don't know. Just interactions like that are kind of entertaining at times, I think. Yeah.
So we're going to get to our next segment very shortly, but I have to ask it a very random, weird question of you. Would you write your story right into the content management system of the website, or would you write it like in Word and then copy and paste it?
Oh, I have to tell you the story. Like I spent 15 years in journalism where you wrote stories and then somebody read them and edited them. Right, and then you looked at them again and then you put them on the page and you printed page proofs and somebody else edited them. And when I went and covered the Pistons, that was gone. Like we wrote our stories.
There was no,
we wrote the headlines.
Yeah.
We put the headlines on it. We put the photos in it. We wrote the cut lines, the captions under the photos. We posted it to MLive Live. We copied the link. We promoted it on social media, all that stuff. And I was terrified. Like it was terrifying to me when I started covering the Pistons, because when you start covering a sport, you're not an expert necessarily. I think I could say that in 2010, when I started covering the Pistons,
sure,
I was not an expert on the Pistons. And I remember it was like Emperor's New Clothes. Like every night I filed a story, I'm like, these people are going to read this story and know that I have no idea what I'm talking
imposter
about.
Imposter syndrome.
Yeah. Again, I'm doing my best. It is imposter syndrome. And I do remember when I got to the point covering the Tigers where I was like, man, I kind of know what I'm not being cocky, but I kind of know what I'm talking about. Like I've been here long enough. Somebody can engage me in an argument on Twitter and I could confidently argue a point that I believed in strongly and then move on. And it was so refreshing. Or go on a radio interview and be able to just snap off answers and responses as opposed to kind of fumbling around. And I remember when I started covering the Pistons, my computer had this program where you could highlight text and push a button and your computer would read it back to you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And when I first started covering the Pistons, I had my computer read my stories back to me with headphones on in case I was missing a word. A lot of the errors you see in journalism aren't in the writing, they're in the editing.
Yeah.
When you start moving paragraphs around, switching tenses, and then the score changes and you rewrite your story, like 80% of the errors I made were made in editing, not in writing. So I used to have my computer read the story back to me. But yeah, it was no net into the content system. And again, you know, in the old days of journalism, you had one deadline. You had a newspaper once a day. And in the digital age, and I know
in retrospect, that was a luxury.
It was a luxury, like because now you might write four stories in a day because things change that fast.
Yeah.
And back then you could just wait till the end of the day and see how it turned out and write your one story and move on. So I always tell people it felt like when I covered the Tigers, I felt like I had like, you know, those timers that people use when they play chess.
Yeah.
Like you I posted a story to MLive. I felt like I pushed a button and I had at max, like I didn't want the site to go 2 hours without a new story. Wow. And obviously that was not maintained from 1 a.m. until, you know, noon the next day or whatever. Although sometimes you still got stories in there or scheduled stories in there. But I remember at the ballpark, I just felt like once I posted a story, I had 60 to 120 minutes to post my next story. And sometimes it was 20, but you know what I mean? It just, it just was constant.
It is time to move on. It is time for our guest presentation of Power Rankings. Take it away, Chris.
This is Colin Ballister, and up next are the Power Rankings brought to you by North River Vodka. North River Vodka, it's Michigan's true spirit.
I can't tell you, I don't feel like I'm qualified to handle this. Like, and when I said jokingly a few days ago to you that I want to do Power Rankings, I was kind of joking. And you were like, okay. And then I think I almost power ranked power ranking topics because like how many did I fire you immediately? Like obscure bands that I like, song titles by Against Me, which is a band I like, not songs. I wasn't going to rank the songs. I was going to actually rank
just
the song
titles. Yes.
Yeah, just the titles. Like just all kinds of random things. But I think, as you sometimes say, to stay on brand, we settled on the correct things. We're going to power rank the best and worst ways to consume potatoes.
Yes. Good. I'm excited. I'll be playing the role of Jordan.
Oh, please do. As some of you may know, I had humble beginnings and grew up on a potato farm in northern Michigan. I at Seed Farms, they now grow 22 million pounds of seed potatoes every year. A little potato trivia for you. So I have a lifelong relationship with the spud. And in doing these power rankings, I really had a hard time. I think you're going to see how great potatoes really are, because even things on my worst three list are perfectly fine.
They're the most magical of root vegetables, I would say.
They're amazing. So can you refresh me? Like I have 7 and 3. Is that
yes,
the correct one?
That's right. That's the number.
And where do I start?
You start at 7. Start at 7.
So we do the best 7 and then we do the worst 3.
That's right.
Okay. I feel like we're going to lose a little thunder here, although I think we all know where this is going. 7th ranked way to consume potatoes. Yes. Scalloped potatoes.
Ooh, I like it.
I think scalloped potatoes are underrated. I like them with, I think ham is really boring, but when you combine the humble ham with the humble scalloped potatoes and maybe even some cheese, you let it go in a crock pot all day.
Okay.
Scalloped potatoes are delicious.
Are you using the fancy real cheese? Or are you just going, box? We're going powder.
Box, oh, no. Cheese. I don't know how my wife does it, but they taste magical. She mixes like, I don't know, milk and cream, butter and salt and pepper. Yeah, like we don't buy the box scalloped potatoes. Those would be on the bottom three list if I had thought of it. But is this the right amount of time? Because I don't want to drag this out.
Yeah, okay. Keep going.
6th on the list, twice baked potatoes.
Oh, yeah. I love these.
Infinitely better than the once baked potato.
Yeah.
Infinitely better.
Thrice baked would be too much, I feel like.
That seems like too much. But if people aren't familiar with twice baked potato, you cook a potato. You dig out the insides, you mix it with some sour cream and some cheese, maybe some bacon, some salt and pepper. You put it back in the potato skin and you cook it again. It's amazing.
I'm noticing a theme here. We got cheese theme so far. That's good.
All right. The cheese is, we're going to go off, but I think I'm going to really throw you for a loop on this one.
Here we go.
And this again shows you how great potatoes are. 5th ranked French fries.
Classic.
French fries are awesome. That's really all I have to say about French fries. My favorite French fries, I don't even know. I like In-N-Out French fries, not because they have good French fries, but because it means I'm at In-N-Out and I really like the burgers.
Good. Yeah.
But French fries, fresh French fries, the right amount of salt, yummy. Yep. And I think most people would think they were higher, but let's keep going. Number 4, possibly the most underrated way to consume potatoes, the tater tot.
Yes, I'm on board.
Tater tots are like French fries, but the ratio of crispiness on the outside to tenderness on the inside is so much better than a French fry.
You get more surface area.
You get more surface area of crisp, but they still have that chew. I think tater tots, vastly underrated.
Are you a tater tot casserole guy, or is that a West Michigan thing?
I've heard of it. I may have had it. I wouldn't say I'm a tater tot casserole guy. I didn't know those guys existed, but you are apparently.
Yeah, very self-defining. I made one a while back. Yeah, it's great. Awesome. Tater Tots are delicious. They have like loaded tots and tachos these days. I feel like the world of tater tots has really expanded.
It's the most underrated of the potatoes.
I agree.
So number three, and I would have ranked this lower if we were ranking like mere potato chips. Okay. But then I remembered, are you familiar with Great Lakes Potato Chip Company?
Yeah, I am. Mm-hmm.
They make kettle cooked potato chips in Traverse City.
They have like a cherry barbecue flavor or something.
They have a cherry barbecue, but for our rankings, number three on the list is Great Lakes Potato Chip Company Parmesan Ranch potato chips. That is the best of the Great Lakes Potato Chip Company potato chips, which are all amazing. But I would highly recommend you get yourself. And I was on their website today. Actually, I know the owner due to my vast potato connections in Michigan. And I believe they have free shipping. So if you'd like to go to their website today and order potato chips, you can have them shipped to your house for free.
Where do you come down on the salt and vinegar chip debate?
I like salt and vinegar chips.
I do too.
If you name chips, keep naming chips, and I will tell you that I like them all, I think. Potato chips are wonderful.
All varieties of chips.
They're great. Yes. Number two on the list. And I really struggle with this because I think we all know where we're going with number one here.
Oh, I do.
And I wanted to put number one, number two, just to surprise you, but I think that would really be off brand, so to speak. So number two on the list, poutine.
Ooh, solid.
Poutine, for those unfamiliar, I'm so sorry if you're not familiar with it, is simply French fries with gravy and cheese curds. But there are so many variations. Grand River Brewery in Jackson has a poutine that you can get brisket, bacon, or pulled pork on. And sometimes if you're really craving it, you can put all three on. Poutine combines the wonderfulness of cheese, the French fry, and gravy. How could you beat poutine?
It's a good choice.
And the only way to beat poutine, as you know, my wife and I own North River Vodka. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say the number one way to consume potatoes responsibly, must be 21.
Yes,
all those course. Other, all those other things is North River Vodka. North River Vodka is made from potatoes grown on Eye Seed Farms in Kalkaska. It's distilled in Traverse City. It's Michigan's true spirit. Michigan's true spirit. Trademarked. So now we move on to the three worst ways to eat potatoes.
Yes.
Do I start at three again?
Yes.
And again, this is going to show you how great potatoes are. Number three on the worst way to eat potatoes, mashed potatoes.
Okay.
And the reason I say this, mashed potatoes and gravy are wonderful. But the star of that show is the gravy. Mashed potatoes without the gravy, it's just mashed potatoes.
Yep.
Number three, mashed potatoes. Number two, potato soup.
Okay, yeah.
I'm just not a soup guy. I like potato soup, just not a soup guy. Yeah, number one, and quite possibly.
Is any soup with potato in it a chowder? Is the potato the defining characteristic of a chowder? Is the potato, creaminess?
No, it's the creaminess. But you can make like a potato corn chowder. We have some kind of potato leek sausage soup at our house sometime.
Ooh,
that's pretty tasty. It's a good way to eat leek. I think there's kale in there too. It's amazing all the bad things that are in that soup, yet it's really good because kale sucks. The worst way to eat potatoes, and I couldn't think of any other ways besides maybe raw, which nobody does.
I have a guess. I'm guessing you're going to say potato salad.
No. Potato salad was on the did not appear list along with, is it pronounced like gnocchi?
Gnocchi.
Don't they make potato gnocchi?
Potato pillows. Sure.
Yep. And then potato salad, once baked potatoes were on the did not appear. The worst way to eat potatoes are boiled. There is nothing less imaginative than taking a potato, either peeling it or not peeling it, boiled. And the worst possible combination is boiled canned potatoes.
Oh, sure.
Potatoes in cans.
I grew up with potatoes from cans. And then what my mom would like dice them up or slice them up and then fry them in a pan.
Oh, well, then you're rescuing them. You're giving them potato CPR at that point.
You know, I can, in my modern adult life, I'm surprised that canned potatoes are still a thing.
I guess things don't go away. Maybe it's the same canned potatoes they canned 50 years ago. And
they've been there since my childhood, right? The shelves of Meijer there.
Yeah. Nobody's made new ones. So there you go. Power rankings.
Good job. That was
Thank
brilliant.
I felt a lot of stress. I felt a lot of stress there, but I think it turned out okay.
This is where usually Jordan says something about what he sees alongside the road while running. I have not done any running this week. So we're going to skip that segment.
Okay. Fair enough. Okay.
So we do have Twitter questions, and I will read you the Twitter questions, and then we will respond to them in a way that approaches an answer. Got it?
Fair enough.
Okay. Mitch from Michigan asks, what's the worst Tigers opinion you had as a child growing up? Me? Whoa. I thought signing noodle-armed Johnny Damon was going to deliver the Tigers a World Series. Didn't work out that way, but did you have any bad sports or Tigers opinions?
Oh, I had a couple of bad sports opinions. I can't think of a Tigers opinion, but my two worst sports opinions were, I'd have to look at the draft, but when the Detroit Pistons passed on Sam Vincent, I believe this is correct. I believe the Detroit Pistons passed on Sam Vincent to select unknown to me from the South, Joe Dumars.
Okay.
I was angry.
That angry they picked young Joe Dumars.
That they picked Joe Dumars over Sam Vincent. And to be fair, I've told Joe Dumars the story when I covered the Pistons.
I'm sure you got a kick out of it.
I believe he was entertained. And another one, I believe I remember telling one of my friends that Barry Sanders was too small. So those, I can't think of any two worse opinions I could have had as a child about sports.
Yep.
But those are my two. And I've just embarrassed myself. So carry on. What are yours?
Mine was probably that the Tigers would win a World Series before I reached middle age. And that turned out to be a bad take. So
are you middle aged?
Yes. Am I?
Okay. I don't know exactly how old you are. And the middle aged line gets moved up every year for me. So
So the Tigers won the World Series last in 1984. Mm-hmm. I had not yet reached kindergarten. So I did not experience that. So I thought, oh, growing up a Tigers fan, I'm 11, 12 sure. or whatever. I'll be able to celebrate someday. World Series title. Turns out, not so much.
Everybody's their own town centric, right? Like you think when your team's rebuilding, right. they're the only team rebuilding. Like every year when the Lions have a draft, people are like, well, these seven guys are really going to help the team. Well, every other team in the NFL also selected seven guys who they think were pretty good too. So,
right.
So yeah, I can see why, you know, you're due for a World Series title every
guy, adult, fan, kid in Pittsburgh thinks the Pittsburgh Pirates are going to, you know, but you know,
no, probably not.
Maybe not. Maybe they don't.
I mean, some of those cities are probably not.
All right.
But for the most part, yes. Yeah. I agree with what you're saying.
Totally. Don Sherman at Don Sherm asks, which current MLB ballpark that you have never been to that you most want to watch a game? Now, this is going to be harder for Chris since he's been to essentially all of them, but
no, there are probably six I have not been to, but go ahead.
So for me, it's got to be PNC in Pittsburgh. I mean, it just looks so picturesque. Everybody raves about the facility, and I would love to get to PNC because I've never been there. It's still PNC, right? Pittsburgh.
I believe so. Get in the car. That's not that far away.
No, it's not.
To be honest, if you're a baseball fan in Michigan and you think you should go to PNC, you should. It's not a far drive. Pittsburgh. I mean, besides all the mountains and the weird roads, and I got sucked across a bridge one time and couldn't find my way back. I mean, besides all that, it's kind of easy to get from the highway right downtown.
Sure.
The walk across the bridge is pretty. Something. The ballpark is beautiful. The press box there was in the sky. Like there in Washington, the press boxes are just so far in the air that, you know, you ever hear a guy go, it's a long fly ball. It caught 40 feet short of the warning track. Like you get tricked. And part of that
I heard Dan Dickerson talking about how it's the most kind of illusionary or elusive park to.
Well, those guys switch parks every 3 days and you get a different perspective every 3 days. And some of those places you just get a skewed view. But with that said, like being that high in Pittsburgh and being able to see the river and the city and, you know, the skyline across the river, it is a beautiful park. And I would say that you are correct in choosing PNC as the park that you should go to.
My favorite PNC park fun fact is when they built the ballpark, they built into it a female umpire locker room, even though there were no female umpires. I thought that was just kind of a fun, you know, it's an allegory for dreaming on something in the future. Sure. And, you know, so that's my favorite fun fact. But
interesting. Did not know that.
Where would you go?
So I believe I was at every ballpark except I did not make the NL East swing one year, except I have been to Washington. So I haven't been to any of the other parks. Mets, Braves. Okay. When I covered
the Braves one is pretty new. They moved out in the suburbs again.
Yeah, I wasn't either one at their old one either. James Schmell used to.
Yeah.
I can't believe if he went to college in Arizona or if he lived in Arizona. So anytime the Tigers went to Arizona, he took that trip. So I've never been to Arizona. And the only other stadium I haven't been in is Milwaukee. And I think that would probably be my choice, which I just said, you should get in the car and drive to Pittsburgh. Like Milwaukee's not really that far for me, but I mean, honestly, I covered, I don't know how many hundreds of games in 5 years. I haven't been to a whole lot of games, since then.
Recreationally.
So, but yeah, recreationally, it's just not, you get spoiled having a parking space and, food and room in the press box and stuff. But no, Milwaukee, I guess, would be the one that I would say.
Mark from Ohio asks, is it too early to have Eric Haas as my Tiger? However, I'm not sure if this is the correct player because I have yet to see the flow chart from this season. Yeah, my flow charting work has been off, but is it too early to have Eric Haas as my Tiger? I'm pretty pro Eric's, so I say go for it.
I believe that whatever you want to like,
yes,
you should like. And I'm sure we've been down this road before. People who think that you shouldn't have ketchup on your hot dog, if you want ketchup on your hot dog, put ketchup on your hot dog. It's nobody's business. And if you judge people for how they eat their hot dogs, you're just a condescending tool. Like if you want to put ice cream and peanut butter on your hot dog, if that's what you like, you do it. If you want to like Taylor Swift, you go love Taylor Swift. That's fine by me. People say I'm a music snob. Like whatever music you want to like, pick whichever tiger you want to be your tiger. That's
there
what
you
I
go.
Feel.
That's good life advice. Thank you, Chris.
It is. I'm happy to be here.
Lev Zuboff at the Jackpot News asks, if Fulmer can stay healthy, the Tigers have three guys throwing 98 to 100 out of the pen. Okay. I question the premise of that a little bit, but let's go with it. What else do they need to add to have a playoff caliber bullpen? Ugh. Well,
go ahead.
They need more trustworthy guys right now. I feel like they're leaning on Cisnero and Soto so hard. Can you trust some of those other guys? They're looking for that third, and Fulmer was kind of there. And you also need a guy or two who can throw you two or three innings. I feel like they have a lot of one inning guys right now. That's just my hot take. I don't know.
I'm not even listening to you because I'm trying to figure out how to navigate what I just said about loving whatever you want to love.
Yeah.
Because I think pondering what they need to have a playoff worthy bullpen on a team that's 40 games from being a playoff team is,
yeah, you're dreaming.
I mean, I guess if you're just like a bullpen guy or you get home late from work and you can only watch the last two innings, like that would be something I would focus on. But a more logical question to me would be like,
how can we get hitting and starting pitching and
starting lineup that would be playoff worthy or when? But I mean, yeah, you know what they need to have a playoff worthy bullpen is good.
You know what they need to have a playoff-worthy bullpen is a playoff-worthy rest of the team.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And also replacing the entire starting rotation and moving all of those guys into the bullpen.
That would work. Definitely. You'd have a playoff-caliber bullpen, but then
you'd no starters.
Suck. Yeah.
No starters, yeah.
He also asks, what are the best vodka-based mixed drinks?
Man, so many good vodka-based mixed drinks, right?
I'm a fan of the Moscow Mule.
The Moscow Mule is a I mean, I would say it's a classic, but I think it's kind of a recent classic. If that's fine.
If I may pontificate for a moment,
sure.
Vodka, by its very nature, is generally a neutral type spirit.
Neutral spirit,
right?
Yes, sir.
So you just want to spice it a little bit or give it a little something. So that's why a vodka martini with a little bit of dry vermouth might be the thing.
Sure.
Is it the Gibbs? So sometimes you put the onion or a twist. I don't like olive. I'm not an olive guy for a martini.
Yeah. So if I may,
you
pontificate, is that a word we use? So North River vodka, is is a little different than your standard neutral spirit vodka. We try to leave a little residual taste in it, so you can taste where it comes from, right?
Yeah.
So North River vodka has a little bit more of an earthy, sweet flavor to it.
It does.
Some people have compared it to a really good tequila.
Sure.
Because it's got a little more. It's not as neutral as many vodkas. I make whiskey drinks with it. I wouldn't say it's like a whiskey, but I'll make an old fashioned with North River vodka.
Yeah, nice.
I'll make a Manhattan with North River vodka. I was going to say I drink a lot of North River vodka, but that's not what I mean. When I drink alcohol, it's often North River vodka, as you could expect. But my current favorite North River vodka drink is the vodka sour.
Ooh.
And what that consists of is like two parts vodka, one part lime juice, or you can use lemon juice if you prefer.
Some simple syrup.
One part simple syrup. And a lot of times we make homemade rosemary simple syrup.
Ooh,
so if you do something like that, it jazzes it up. And then if anybody wants the recipe, I'd say reach out to me. But it also involves a lot of shaking and egg whites.
Yeah.
And egg whites are an underrated drink ingredient. When you make a vodka sour with egg whites, what you end up is with a delicious drink with mouthfeels. Yeah, that's a spirit related word that I try to avoid. But yeah, good mouthfeel. But it's almost like having meringue on your drink. Like there's a certain luxury, a certain smoothness when you drink a vodka sour made with egg whites. And I know a lot of people are afraid to drink raw eggs. That's probably overrated. But you can also get. I have egg whites that I buy in cartons because then they're pasteurized and they're even more safe than your everyday egg white. So I would say the homemade vodka sour is currently my favorite.
There you go. Anthony Troya, a regular questioner on the show, asks, if the Tigers do something crazy and finish the season, say, 10 or 12 games under 500, do you think Ilitch will invest or do you think we're destined to be the Pirates slightly north? To encapsulate this question, and I think it's a question that a lot of Tigers fans are asking, is will there be a time where Chris Ilitch spends some money? Are we going to have a chance to relive some of the Mike Ilitch days, or is this now just done on the balance sheet, or is there any passions left there?
I think there's probably I think the Tigers will spend money when they get close. I think it's harder and longer term to get close than people want it to be.
Sure.
Right.
Yep.
I think there's probably a happy medium between being the current Tigers or the Pirates and being the Mike Ilitch Tigers.
Sure.
And when I say that, there's a strategy in which you don't go,
because they were top five in spending for years.
And some of that spending was extending Miguel Cabrera before you needed to. And some of that was when maybe you should have been rebuilding, going out and getting
an old Victor
Upton.
Yeah.
Upton or Zimmerman. Like some of those contracts, I mean, people like stars and like an owner that spends money. But I think sometimes when you do that or when you go out and get Prince Fielder
right
a week after he didn't fit on the team, quote, right, and move Miguel Cabrera to third, like some of that. And then when it goes to spend on the bullpen, well, we don't really do that because we just signed Prince Fielder. Like some of that stuff I think was sometimes, I don't want to say it was counterproductive. It was fun for fans, I'm sure.
It could be more
and
efficient.
They had a chance, but I think there's a happy medium in which you're a little more efficient and try to plug some holes and get better gradually. It's not as flashy. It's not as much fun maybe for fans, but will they, I think they'll spend when they get close. I just don't know that they're going to be close at the end of this year, like 10 or 12 out. I mean, I know that was the premise of the question, but
yeah,
just a little ways,
And finally, my favorite question, the weather is looking iffy for this evening. This is State of Michigan, man. He asks, the weather is looking iffy for this evening. Does Chris know if the game is going to start on time or not? How's the weather looking, Chris?
How did I become the weather guy? I have a theory. I think there were a few months where I found dark sky.
Okay. Yeah.
Before anybody else realized dark sky existed, the weather app. And dark sky, like all weather apps, has its faults. But one thing that Dark Sky was really good at is saying, it's going to start raining in 9 minutes and quit 22 minutes later. So I would be on Dark Sky during games and I'd be like, they better hurry up. It's going to rain in like 9 minutes. And then it would rain in 9 minutes. And I think people thought I was a wizard.
You are a wizard. You became the authority.
Yeah, I don't know. They might or might not have a game on time tonight. I think I answered that question directly to him and said, there's 100% chance it will either start on time or it won't. Like, I have no idea. I'm not the weather guy. I've retired. That job didn't pay well anyway.
Well, Chris, our time is coming to a conclusion. I've had a lot of fun, and I'm just going to assume you did too. But is there anything else that you have to say to our faithful listeners?
I guess not. Thanks.
Thank you. Are you going to come back maybe next week? Maybe
I'll come back.
We're trying for a special guest. Maybe we'll see.
I would love to come back next week, and I would love to chat with a special guest. So and I don't know, are we going to gloss over the power rankings intro?
No, I'll put it in. Oh, should we talk?
Okay,
about it?
I feel like we should talk about that. Like,
okay, yeah, talk about it.
Colin Ballister.
Yes.
Did the power ranking intro, right?
Yes. So to give people some context, I think maybe we should do that. So Colin Ballister was traded for Ryan Perry, correct?
They traded Ryan Perry for Colin Ballister. Yes,
and it felt like kind of a one-for-one swap at the time to me. And I think Colin Ballister is maybe most famous for his, did he not have a kind of a outlandish mustache or a mustache at the time?
Outlandish seems extreme.
He was a distinctive mustache.
He was I mean, I guess he probably still is tall. he's a tall guy, had a mustache. I remember he showed up at a Tigers playoff game after he had moved on to another team. I don't remember how he left, but he had said that he was in the Tiger shop or whatever, or wherever people buy paraphernalia. Yeah. D shop. Yeah. I didn't spend a lot of time there. He was in the D shop and somebody mistook him for Doug Fister, which is funny. Cause I think Doug Fister might've been pitching that night. But like Doug Fister, tall, thin, could throw the ball hard. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Colin Ballister. Let me tell you a story about that. Like I think maybe I've told the story. I was so excited to see this new phenomenal rookie Justin Verlander come up, and I'm watching him warm up in the bullpen. I'm like, yeah, well, this guy looks like good stuff. And he's walking out excited for Justin Verlander. And it was Sean Douglas. I had him mixed up.
You had a mix
up. But like, you get people out of context. Like, it's hard to know.
Absolutely. So I have to tell you, the reason I love Colin Ballister is because Colin Ballister does not take himself seriously. He's just a good dude. So yesterday, I think you saw the text exchange. I texted Colin Ballister. I'm like, hey, do you want to record an intro to the power rankings for a podcast I'm going to be on tomorrow? And 3 seconds later, he said, yes. I didn't tell him what he was going to say. And it was like he was sitting at his kitchen table holding the phone, like waiting for us to ask him to do an intro. Like he was like, yeah, absolutely. When I covered the Tigers, like I love people that you can ridicule in a funny way.
Rib. Yeah, give him a little
rib. And can take it. Yeah. And Colin Ballister, I actually looked this up today. After the Colin Ballister left the Tigers, he had some kind of an arm ailment, and he ended up pitching in the rookie league. Okay, he's 28 years old.
Wow.
And he was pitching in the rookie league. And his statistics for that year, and he was 0-1. He pitched in two games, one and a third innings. He allowed 10 runs on 8 hits. So his ERA was 54.0.
Oh, geez.
His whip was an even 9.00. And when he was doing this, I texted Colin Ballister and I'm like, an ERA of 67 and a whip of 9 isn't going to get you back to the show, son, or something like that. And he was a guy I could say it to because I knew he would take it well. And he was like, dude, everybody down here is 18. And he was 28 at the time. I'm sure he felt like he was in a foreign land. He's like, everybody down here is 18. And they're, I don't know if he said something like they're using me for batting practice or something. Like he knew my arm feels like mud. Like, I don't remember. He said something like that. Like he was struggling. He was throwing 80 some miles an hour and just getting over the plate and people were whacking him. But he was a guy who I could send that text to and I knew he would laugh and take it well. So, Colin Ballister, power rankings.
So we'll see if he's on next week. We'll ask him ourselves, and we're looking forward to that. So, yeah, again, definitely, thank you, Chris. Appreciate it. Thanks for listening to the podcast, Giannis. This is where Jordan says, eat them up, Tigers, eat them up. And then
I say
goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
I have to, this is a little bit of role reversal for me because, you know, I have to be the Jordan.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.